Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Merkel Media.
Good, everybody. This is Joel Thomas, and this is Free the Rabbits. And how are all the free range rabbits doing out there today? First off, I want to say thank you to everyone who's been giving a 5-star review. It has really helped the show grow because it allows the show to get deeper into the algorithm so people that don't normally get a hold of the show can get a hold of the show. So, in saying that, if you've been listening to the show and you haven't given a 5-star review, please go do that now before we even get started. And if you're new to the show, well, listen to the show first. And if you feel like it deserves a 5-star review, please give it a 5-star review at the end of the show. Also, for people who have been asking how they can donate to the show, well, there's a couple of ways. First, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/freetherabbits. You can give a one-time donation there, or you can set yourself up for a monthly donation. Also, you can go to YouTube, where we have YouTube memberships. We have 3 different tiers. We have Nephilim Portal Baby, Nephilim Hunter, and Good Nephilim. All 3 of those have a few different options, but they all come with custom emojis that you can use in the comments and use in the live chats. Again, I really appreciate you guys helping the show grow in any way that you can, even if it's just donating your time. And now, let's get into the show. What's going on, guys? We're back with another episode of Free the Rabbits, and I've got a guest this week, and he is phenomenal. And by the way, for everyone that's been asking who did the AI video that starts out all of my episodes, this is the guy, Thomas from Paranoid American. Yep, that's him.
All right.
Yep. And people love the song and they love the video that starts out here on YouTube and Rumble. And they're always asking about it. And I'm kind of like, well, his name's there at the very beginning of the video. It says who created
it's hidden.
It. But
it's kind of subliminal.
It's kind of subliminal. So Thomas is a great dude and an absolutely fantastic researcher. And that's the kind of guest I have on the show. People that go deep with a lot of different subjects. And I was thinking about doing an episode on Operation Mockingbird. And I just kind of clicked with me. I said, you know what? I bet Thomas would be great for this. Let me go ahead and hit him up real quick. And you were like, yeah, actually, I've got a bunch of research on it already. You did a pamphlet on it, by the way.
Yeah, I would be great for this. Yeah, and I can back it up today too. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, no, it's going to be awesome. And like I tell everybody when they listen to this, when I have guests on, I'm riding in the passenger seat. I'm going to talk a lot. I've got a lot of things to add, but obviously I'm going to hand the reins to you. And we'll kind of go into the origins of how it started, how it even came into the zeitgeist. And then we'll get into, obviously, there's a lot of names, a lot of dates, and we're going to move into kind of the modern version of where it's moving now, because there's so many different aspects of it. I don't think it ever stopped. And even though they said it did back in, I believe it was the 70s, they said it stopped. I think a lot of us are a little smarter than that. We understand at least it moved into a different incarnation as it kept evolving. And I think it's still evolving.
Well, like you just mentioned, when you first brought this up to me, I've been working on a comic book about Operation Mockingbird for a while. And it's a tough nut to crack because it's just so many legal documents and business names and dates and sort of boring decisions. News reporters, if you wanted to illustrate Mockingbird, it would just be a bunch of guys on the phone and sending letters and reading newspapers, which doesn't make for a great comic. But it has forced me to kind of refine and figure out the most interesting key points about this entire operation. And I also want to start out, I think you brought this up before we started recording. There is a Operation Mockingbird, which is what we care about. And then there's a Project Mockingbird, which we don't really care about as much. It's sort of tangential, but it was a way more focused, very limited operation talking about these two individual reporters. When we talk about Operation Mockingbird, we're talking about over 400 journalists on the CIA payroll that are the little tentacles are reaching all the way into Time Magazine, CBS, New York Times, all the big names. They don't leave any of the names out. We're also talking about a small news service called the Copley News Service that was 23 CIA agents. Now, I want to be clear. These are not journalists that got contracted by the CIA. The CIA literally took their agents and put together a news service and called it the Copley News Service. So the entire operation was just straight up CIA embedding themselves in the media directly. That's kind of wild. There's one particular name called Frank Wisner, and he liked to refer to himself or his Operation Mockingbird as the Mighty Wurlitzer. And if you don't know the Wurlitzer, yeah, it's a popular instrument. You've heard it in Prince, Supertramp, kind of built around it. I believe that Miles Davis, maybe there was like a whole sort of movement in the 70s and 80s when Wurlitzer became really big. But the whole point was that he was saying that he can control the entire world's media like it were a keyboard. Like he could just walk up to it and play a little ditty and see how that reverberates out. And he kind of owned that whole title. So the Mighty Wurlitzer. Also, there's a concept in military strategy called a force multiplier. And this is where we're going to get into MK Ultra maybe for a second, a guy named Edward Lansdale. And the whole point about this force multiplier is that you're not going to be able to draw direct connections. Like here's Mockingbird and here's this guy and here's this news service. Cause there was a little bit more tact than that. They didn't sign these news articles, you know, signed the CIA courtesy of Operation Mockingbird. So a lot of this kind of gets implied and insinuated through court documents that come out in the church hearings and a few different magazine articles and exposés, one from Rampart. This is kind of how it slowly comes into focus over time. The ultimate bottom line here is that CIA was creating fronts. They were creating organizations, media conglomerates, everything. They were just setting up an entire information network that was global so that they could decide what the narrative would be at any given place, at any given moment, and they could just change it on a whim. And the main reason, spoiler alert, that this maybe failed, I'm not going to say stopped, but I'm going to say failed in the short term, was that it worked too well. It worked so well that they would send out some misinformation and it would make its way all the way around the world and back so fast that they didn't realize they were responding to their own noise, to their own reverberations. So they had to slow it down. They got exposed. So in my opinion, it's still going on today. And I think that's probably where you're going to lead us to as well.
Yeah, for sure, man. And you were talking about Frank Wisner and really his connection, not just the church hearings, but his connection to this Operation Mockingbird really came to the forefront with a book called Catherine the Great with Deborah Davis in 1979. And she did this autobiography, is unauthorized, of Catherine Graham, who was the owner of the Washington Post. And Davis was stating that the CIA ran this Operation Mockingbird during the time in conjunction with Deborah Davis. And she brought up Frank Wisner as the director of Office and Policy Coordination as being a part of running this. And actually, he created it. And he recruited Phil Graham of the Washington Post to run the project within the industry. So she was one of the first ones to write a book about it. And what was really crazy about when she wrote the book, all of these different news organizations were absolutely lambasting her. I mean, Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, New York Times, all of them were lambasting her, which honestly, that put more heat on them by doing that because it made it look like that what she was saying was true. Now, there were some variances in the book if you take a look at it, because one of the topics that she talks about was the Watergate scandal, and she brings up Deep Throat, who was a CIA officer that funneled information to Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, who were basically blowing the cap off the whole Watergate scandal. And she said that Deep Throat was actually Richard Ober, but it came out later on that the FBI associate director, Mark Felt, was actually the Deep Throat. And he came out right before he died through one of his attorneys. And he said that, oh, I'm actually the guy. Now, is he actually the guy or not the guy? We don't know. That could just be something that he was told to do on his way out. And it took the heat off who it really was. It could have actually been Richard Ober. I don't know. But there were some variances in the book. And I know that it got ripped to shreds, but made it seem like there was a lot of validity to it because it was getting ripped to shreds, in my opinion. And one of the famous quotes from the book that she said was, you could get a journalist cheaper than a good call girl for a couple hundred dollars a month. So she was basically saying, hey, all of these journalists are for hire. All of them for the CIA. It didn't even matter. Like, they could just come and drop a couple hundred dollars in your pocket, which was, you know, good money at that time. And they're just going to report the news the way that the CIA wanted them to. And I think that early on in that period of time in America, what it did, because you only had certain places to get your news from. It's not like now where you just have an overwhelmingly amount of places to get quote unquote news from, whether it's real or not. But you have all these different avenues. You only had certain avenues. You had Walter Cronkite. You know what I mean? You didn't have all of these different places to go. So what it did was they funneled the info that they wanted you to see, and it solidified Americans together. And if you ever listen, Thomas, to people from the old guard, that, you know, the boomers, they always talk about, man, America was a better place back then. We were all together. We were all on board with the same thing. Well, yeah, you were being conditioned to believe whatever they told you. And yeah, if there was some sort of war they told you that you needed to go to or you needed to support, you did, because you believed the information that you were being told.
Yeah, I usually think of this in a different analogy that makes the same point, where now in 2025, five people show up to the water cooler. If we're 20 years ago, you know, before the advent of internet video and all these different options, 20 years ago, we might all be talking about the same American Idol show or the same whatever news stories going around between five people at the water cooler. 2025, five people show up. One's a furry, one's into like God stuff, one's into like ultra wave techno stuff. You know, it's less of a chance that you're just going to grab five random people geographically and they're going to share interest the same way that they did 2, 3, 4 decades ago, right? And I don't know, maybe this is a pro and a con of the whole CIA running some of the media, is that it did make like a homogenous society where people felt like they could relate to each other. And that was part of the intent. The other part too is, I think, not just money. You're working as a journalist. Yeah, it would be nice in the 70s, 60s or 70s to have an extra couple hundred dollars for an article. But on top of that, now you've got credibility because you've got access to some sort of government story, and they're kind of doing your job for you. It's almost like someone showing up and like, here, I did your homework for you last night, and here's $200. Do you want it? Just turn it into the teacher. So there's this dynamic that makes it very hard to say no. And it's a weird coincidence that you started out talking about Katharine Graham, because quick tangent personal story, the how Operation Mockingbird even came on my radar was so unrelated to being in conspiracies or anything. I was in college, and I think it was a psychology course, and I can't tell you why, but the teacher assigned us to read a personal history, a memoir, which is the actual biography by Katharine Graham, not the unauthorized. This was her own one. And the whole premise of the book, reading, going in blind for a psychology course, nothing to do with conspiracies, going in blind, and it's the ultimate rags to riches story. And since I've been just a tiny kid, since I saw the Mickey Mouse version of Prince and the Pauper, I've never believed in rags to riches stories. And it makes me all the more curious and skeptical. So after I finished reading this book, I was wondering, how did she rise so quickly? How did she get into... And then I start finding all these CIA connections, and it was like, oh, of course. And my entire essay on the book ended up being about how the CIA was funding Katharine Graham, and the teacher didn't like it, but it set me down a weird course that I was not originally planning on going down, all because of this one lady who... I'm not going to say she was the linchpin by any means. If anything, she might have been the leaky faucet in a way. Like, maybe she liked it a little bit too much, or she was seen with a few too many connections and didn't realize over time that some of this stuff would come to light. But also, I mean, she's still regarded as a best-selling author and an inspirational, powerful woman. You know what I mean? So I guess joke's on us. Even if all this came out, you still get to be a hero, even if you're behind one of the biggest psyops on the American public in our, I guess, like, living history.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I completely agree with that. And I like the leaky faucet analogy, because it does seem like that's how people were getting wind of what she was doing. And we're talking about linchpins and beginnings. And I would honestly say, I would go a little further back, and I wouldn't even say necessarily, and it would take place during this Operation Mockingbird as well, but I would even bring a guy like Edward Bernays into the picture.
Well, absolutely, man, because Edward Bernays, this is a wild connection too, is we've got a connection through the Century Club. Edward Bernays was in a thing called the Century Club. Another member of that Century Club was a guy named Henry Luce, who also owned and operated Time Life magazine, which I believe also controlled Reader's Digest. So anything that the housewives were reading to keep them busy at home or in the grocery shopping aisle, this is all being controlled by Century Club. And by the way, Skull and Bones member. So it's all getting funneled through that. So he becomes this centerpiece, and Henry Luce also comes up very often in Operation Mockingbird, because all you really had to be at that point, if you were in a conglomerate, you just had to be on the side of America. You had to be anti-communist, pro-capitalist, and if you just met that very meager criteria, then you're kind of on the payroll already. The CIA might just straight up cut you a check and say, keep doing what you're doing. You don't even necessarily have to do anything covert. Just keep being pro-America, anti-communist.
Right. Absolutely, man. And just for the listeners that don't know who Edward Bernays is, he was an American pioneer in the field of public relations and propaganda. Matter of fact, he was known as the father of propaganda. He wrote a book called Propaganda in 1928. And his uncle, actually double uncle, was Sigmund Freud. And he was deep into how to manipulate people to get them to do what you wanted to do. And one of the most interesting I guess, what's a good word for it? Like a experiment that he did as a part of propaganda was when he started out, he worked for Liggett and Myers, which was a cigarette company. And he competed against Lucky Strike, which was the big one. And part of that, he basically was, he mocked the opera singers who said, Lucky Strike, we're kind of your voice. And so because of that, George Washington Hill, who is the head of American Tobacco Company, and which made Lucky Strike, basically hired Bernays away from Liggett and Myers and said, come over here and work for us. and he created this whole thing called Torches of Freedom. And basically, he made smoking cigarettes popular for women. And what he did as a part of that, there were these public displays, or there would be parades or whatever. And what he would do, he'd have these women come down off of these stairs in groups or separate smoking cigarettes, beautiful women, and they would do this in the crowd. And it would operate in a way where these other women would see it and they would say, oh, that's how we should look. And he would make sure that the women that he set to do this, he said, weren't too model-y, but they were pretty. So he made them look more obtainable or more in line with the women that were around them. So they said, oh, I could be that too. And so he basically got all these women hooked on cigarettes during this period of time. And that was one of his early experiments on propaganda and how to manipulate the mind. And we're talking about the nephew of Sigmund Freud. So he was absolutely trying to manipulate people's minds. Side note, also, Mark Bernays Randolph is also a nephew of Edward Bernays, and he was the co-founder and first CEO of Netflix. If that lets you know about any kind of propaganda being pushed through Netflix now, we've got a guy who's related to Sigmund Freud and Edward Bernays who's running Netflix, which I also think is a propaganda machine as well. Well, any of these types of apps or programs now are putting out all kind of programming and volume to manipulate our minds to at least subtly to see things that they want us to see.
I mean, it runs in the family. So what are you going to not carry the torch, right, of what grandpappy did? So yeah, the propaganda business probably pays really well. And if you like tweaking with people's minds, having the opportunity to do this at scale is something that even if you were an expert, most people aren't confronted with those kind of resources and that sort of opportunity. So again, being in the Century Club or being in Skull and Bones or being part of, you know, like the Bush White House, as we'll get into, all of these things afford you these opportunities that normal people would never come across.
Absolutely, man. And I completely agree with that for sure. And there's just so many different people that are involved with this entire operation. And I want to get into the church committee a little bit as well and talk about what that was and what Frank Church's whole purpose was in bringing this to the forefront, because there were so many different operations that he brought out in conjunction with this. And if you want to jump into a little bit of that and explain to people what the church committee was and what Frank Church was doing.
He was a senator, Senator Frank Church. And between the years of 1975 and 1976, he chaired what was known as the church committee. And this was the first in history, the first major congressional investigation into U.S. intelligence of any kind, OSS, CIA, name it. This happened to be right after the CIA was created. OSS no longer existed. This is why it's called the church committee or the church hearings or the
That was in 1945, wasn't it? When the OSS disbanded and it was the back end of 1945. Correct, yeah,
and we'll do a little timeline too, because this is going to line up with another name that we're going to ease into it. So most people even know about Operation Mockingbird because of Frank Church and this church committee. He basically, he was the one that exposed the CIA involved in the media, in domestic spying, which was a new thing too, assassination plots. It went way deeper than just Operation Mockingbird. It went, so there was this collection of papers called the Family Jewels that come out. I'll get more into that later too, but in the Family Jewels is where all this Operation Mockingbird information kind of gets derived. And he had this one parting quote that after these church committee hearings and after they've gone through all the different trials, he basically said that he was concerned because for Americans, a tyrant could impose total tyranny. That's the quote, impose total tyranny in the U.S. if they just had, you know, a seat at this this sort of Wolitzer, right? The Frank Wisner Wolitzer. Now, anyone that can sit in front of that Wolitzer and play this media, they can basically impose total tyranny domestically. And this is somewhat remarkable because the CIA's role was meant to be everything not domestic. The domestic was supposed to be under the purview of the FBI, which evolved from the FBN, which was sort of a conglomerate of like DEA, ATF sort of operations. But this was something that was supposed to be out of scope for the CIA. And the Church Committee blew that out of the water. They said, look, here's plenty of evidence that the CIA is doing domestic operations. And in addition to that, controlling the media all over the globe. So that's where Frank Church comes in. And that's where you're going to hear Church Committee. If it weren't for him, we wouldn't know about all this. And it's important to note that his committee, I don't believe, ever actually named anything Operation Mockingbird. This comes from people sifting through everything that came from the Church Committee long after that. So it was like this big expose in public, and now the records are out in the open, and now other journalists that aren't part of Mockingbird are getting interested, and they tear it over. Like, you know, you drop a chicken wing or something, and the ants come and they pick apart all the little bits of it and they leave it clean. That's sort of what happened with these Family Jewels.
Yeah, I know that in 1967, because 1975 is when the Church Committee happened. 1967, there was a Ramparts article from Ramparts Magazine, which Edward Michael Keaton Sr. ran that magazine, started that magazine and ran it. And it didn't run very long, 1962, 1975, but they were one of the first ones to talk about that the CIA was support fronting groups around that time. And they brought up the whole National Student Association receiving funds from the CIA. They were kind of the first precursor to get that ball rolling. And then the Church Committee comes along. And man, we're talking about a lot of stuff that they brought to the forefront. Operation MK Ultra was a part of that, which also talked about Project Artichoke was a part of that. COINTELPRO was a part of that. And when you get into COINTELPRO, that's when they were infiltrating Black Panthers, KKK, all these different...
Well, that was the FBI's version of what the CIA was also doing. They were
right.
They were sort of not as collaborative. Maybe not even to this day, but they kind of did their own thing. And that, yeah, COINTELPRO is the FBI's version of the CIA operation that was supposed to be happening globally, but was also happening domestically.
Yeah, and you brought up Family Jewels, which was, we brought it up, we didn't even explain what it is, but the CIA program to covertly assassinate foreign leaders. And that's interesting too, because we're going to talk about some of these music groups that were sent out across the world as a part of propaganda. And while that was going on, these CIA groups were going out with them trying to assassinate. And some of them did assassinate some of these leaders in some of these other countries as a part of that. So very interesting stuff. Project Shamrock's talked about there too. And that ties into Signals Intelligence, which also ties into Project Echelon, Five Eyes, all of that type of stuff too. So this was just chock full of not just Operation Mockingbird, but several different operations that were going on, like you said, not only locally, but globally too.
Yeah. Again, the strategic name for these are force multipliers. And again, and we'll get into that with Edward Lansdale. Here's some other names in succession that we can add onto this list from Frank Church. Seymour Hersh was another one of these whistleblowers in December of 74. He is the one that writes an article in the New York Times citing all of these CIA operations. And he's the one that also popularizes this CIA memo titled The Family Jewels. And this is what gets people interested enough that now with enough public sentiment, the church committee can move forward and the public kind of understands and they can kind of rally behind it a little bit. I wonder how much people really cared about it as it was going on versus after everything from the committee got released. But Seymour Hersh was instrumental in all of this, basically leading to the church committee being popular. Then we've got the people that I would say are behind the scenes, actually making Operation Mockingbird a thing. We mentioned Frank Wisner. He was clearly one of them. He was head of something called the Office of Policy Coordination, the OPC. And that was, they each got to carve their own little divisions out and do whatever they wanted from them. We also have Alan Dulles, who was the CIA director and the key power broker throughout a large portion of this Cold War, span of Operation Mockingbird. There's another guy named Cord Meyer, and Cord Meyer is probably the closest to a linchpin. There's so many key figures, but this guy was a former liberal idealist that turns into a CIA specialist. And in 1951, he led this group called the IOD, which was the International Organizations Division. How generic of a name is that, by the way? And this is the branch of intelligence in the CIA that was the most closely linked to this Operation Mockingbird. So this, when I say linchpin, he's kind of at the forefront of this through the IOD. And what he does is he essentially just manages funding through all these different CIA front organizations like Congress for Cultural Freedom. That's one of the biggest ones, the CCF. And then in turn, through the CCF and through all these other front organizations, he props up radio stations, magazines, student groups. All of these come directly out of Cord Meyer pulling strings and deciding where he's going to write checks to. So those are some of the main names. There's also a guy named Joseph Alsop. He was named by Carl Bernstein as a CIA asset during Operation Mockingbird. And then finally, George H.W. Bush, I think he kind of cuts his teeth on this because he gets brought in probably by Cord Meyer, the guy that's running all the funding, the guy that's like at the brain of Operation Mockingbird. He brings in George Herbert Walker Bush, and George Herbert Walker Bush, he kind of is the one that maintains the connections between the CIA covert ops and the rest of the world. And this is before he himself becomes director of the CIA. So I think that George Bush being brought into Operation Mockingbird through Cord Meyer is what allows him to take that next step and eventually become president.
The interesting thing about George Bush, I'm so glad you brought that up too, because there's some back and forth of whether that George Bush Sr. was in the CIA or not. I know there's some documents out there. There's some CIA documents that have his name in them, but they claim that it's a different George Bush, that it's not actually George Bush Sr. I don't know if you've seen some of those.
When we say senior, do we mean Herbert Walker, or are we talking Prescott now?
Well, I'm talking about, so George W.'s dad is who I'm talking about.
Yeah, George Herbert Walker Bush. That's what we're talking about. Well, I mean, he was director of the CIA, so it almost seems like you're splitting hairs to see, like, well, was he part of the CIA before he was the head of the CIA? Does it really matter?
Well, it's really weird, too, because I don't understand, like, why that was actually a thing, because I guess this is the thing that they're saying. They're trying to say he was an operative and not just the head of the CIA.
Well, he was a non-official cover agent, whatever that means. That's the official explanation for his role during Operation Mockingbird, was a non-official cover agent. So what is that? It's like an agent with an asterisk next to it, you know? It's like how Shaq is like a deputy with an asterisk.
Yeah.
The other reason George Bush is important here is because the fallout of the church committee and the fallout of Operation Mockingbird going public, he kind of handles he navigates all of that. So he becomes the CIA director in 1976, right? So 74, 75 is where the church committee happens. 76, H.W. Bush is running the show. And he just kind of makes sure that it fizzles out nice and soft, like, you know, it doesn't turn into something as big as that really could have. And in my opinion, it's probably because Operation Mockingbird was still in full effect. So even though it got exposed, they could kind of control how much exposure it truly got outside of anyone that cared about reading about the church committee hearings and all the findings from that.
Yeah, I do find that part with George Bush interesting. And I was reading a CIA document earlier, and it just made me think about that. And I wonder what you had thought about that. And I'm with you. It's just the asterisk, right? I mean,
in my opinion, the Skull and Bones existed before the CIA existed. I mean, that's not even an opinion. That's just a fact. And the Skull and Bones was also known as kind of a recruitment ground. If you wanted to get into finance or intelligence, that was sort of the best way to, you know, your first step on that journey. So even before the CIA, even before the OSS existed, the Skull and Bones was a de facto secret intelligence group. So if anything, he would be like the OG CIA. Like, he wouldn't have to join the CIA because he was grandfathered in literally through Prescott Bush, the patriarch of the entire Bush family. And then their dealings with the Harriman brothers that led into World War II. Like, this is all before the CIA even had a reason to exist. They were doing CIA stuff. So I think it's like splitting hairs whether or not he was officially an operative. He has CIA and Skull and Bones blood running through his veins since the day he was born. So you can't get closer to it than that, I don't think.
No, for sure. And I think, especially when we're looking at whistleblowers and people that were coming out around this time that were talking about it, not in name Operation Mockingbird, but talking about the CIA controlling information, you know, Ralph Walter McGee, we'd have to bring up as well in this part. And he was a former CIA officer, and he stated that the CIA often placed news stories anonymously in news publications to spread false ideas favorable to the CIA goals. Stories that the CIA planted might be picked up and further spread by additional newspapers and other third parties. In a slightly altered form, or even picked up as news and then rewritten by a journalist. So I'll get to a funny story here, because you brought up the fact that it was working so well, right, that it actually worked against them sometimes. So he talks about this story in 1965. It was a CIA fabrication, and it was a story about weapons shipments sent by sea to the Viet Cong in a CIA effort to prove foreign support for the Viet Cong. And the CIA took tons of communist-made weapons from its own warehouses, loaded them on a Vietnamese coastal vessel, faked a firefight, and then called in Western reporters to prove that the North Vietnamese aid to the Viet Cong. The story got picked up all these different news sources. It started just spreading like wildfire, to the point that the Marines, the U.S. Marines, begin to patrol the coast to intercept the reported contraband. So they kept running into this problem, because you said earlier it was working so well that it was actually working against them in some ways. And Ralph McGee was a big whistleblower when he got out of the CIA. And I don't know if that was by design or if that was what he just on his own wanted to do because he felt bad, you know, when he was in there. But I thought that was an interesting story. And I thought about that earlier when you brought that up about how well it was working. And in this day and age, it just wouldn't be able to work that well, not with the way the information moves so quickly. And, you know, you've got a bunch of people like you and I out there that when something happens, we're like, false flag, or let me look and see.
Well, and some of the specific news outlets that we're talking about, again, New York Times, these aren't rinky-dink news outlets. There's plenty of rinky-dink ones that end up being that second and third ring that you just mentioned, but it all kind of stems from these big ones. New York Times, and there was one journalist, and I'm using that term very loosely for the next few minutes here, but there was a guy that worked, they named James Reston, and he was a long-term columnist. And he was also their Washington bureau chief for the New York Times. He had direct ties with the CIA. They basically had open editorial suggestions for anything that he put through. It was like, hey, what do you guys think about this? And if they made changes, then he would just print those changes out. Again, none of these articles specifically say by Operation Mockingbird for obvious reasons, but you can go through anytime from like the 1950s to the 1970s, even to the point that the New York Times themselves admitted in the 1970s that it had been allowing the CIA to review their copy, although they claimed that like the influence was minimal. They were like, oh yeah, They review all of our stuff. They editorialize our stuff, but it's very minor. Don't worry about it. One particular, there was an article supporting U.S. actions in Iran in 1953. There was another one about supporting U.S. operations in Guatemala. And basically the articles from the New York Times almost were a one for one of the CIA internal memos. So it was obvious when you can actually compare the article themselves, these internal CIA memos, they were basically using this verbatim. We also had Time Magazine, which again was the guy Henry Luce. And inside Time Magazine, they had a whole bunch of correspondence. And one of the main ones was Charles Douglas Jackson. And he was not only the editor of Time Magazine, but he worked directly for Eisenhower as the psychological warfare advisor. So again, inside of one of the most read sort of periodicals in the country, the guy editing it is a psychological warfare expert for the military. So, I mean, it feels like they just did what naturally came to them. And CBS News, another trusted name, right? It doesn't matter which outlet you go with, Times, Life, CBS, New York, Washington Post, no matter what angle you would go down, you're getting Mockingbird information. He also mentioned that he had a friendly relationship with Carl Bernstein directly, this guy William Paley at CBS News. Washington Post, oh, you already mentioned Katherine Graham, her husband Phil Graham, who was the actual publisher, and they were close to Frank Wisner directly. So that this was like almost one of the main veins. But from these main sources, I believe also the AP had been infiltrated. You mentioned before that there's all these different sources people get their news from now. Well, even now, a lot of it comes from like Reuters and AP, Associated Press, and like a few others. Those are like the respected sort of like faucets in which all this stuff comes through. And if you're not tapping into those sources, you're kind of considered fringe or a man on the street journalist, or you're at Daily Wire. You're one of these others, unless you get your information from these same sources. And then all the different outlets put their unique spin, or maybe they look into it a little bit more, they editorialize it slightly differently. But the DNA and the system, the Operation Mockingbird, I don't know if they latched onto it or if they helped design this, but where it's like, hey, if we just sit here and watch AP and Reuters incoming news and just report on that, our jobs are half done for us. Mm-hmm. And if that was either controlled by or designed by the CIA, that would make an obvious entry point in order to do everything they wanted to.
Yeah, and that also plays into an episode I did very early on when I started out the podcast, where I talk about the journalist stuff today isn't really a journalist, it's AI, and how AI is actually writing all these articles. And it's funny because you'll see the names sometimes, and like, that's not a real person. But these articles are getting pumped out in record time, and they're using AI to do that because they're able to pull all of these different facts super quick and put together an article and post it. So you've got, like you said, AP and Reuters who are at the top, and they're pumping out these AI articles and probably manipulated. And then, like you said, you've got these other news organizations that are just getting it. Sometimes I'll see them verbatim take it word for word and put it out. Sometimes they'll change it up a little bit and make it sound a little different. But yeah, you're right. That's exactly what's happening, is you've got this top funneling system. But I will say the big caveat, Thomas, is that people are way more aware of how that system works now. So people are looking more for the alternative media. And that's why podcasts got so big, because that is, for a lot of people, where they get their news from now. And I'm not saying that podcasts can't be controlled too, because I think that's just the new version of where that the government's going to get their grubby hands into. But at least people feel like that they're able to get a more ethical person telling them the news, as opposed to this faucet that you're talking about.
Well, you might be a bigger optimist than I am in that. Just one counterpoint. Even if you go back to vintage Alex Jones, early 2006 Alex Jones, 2010 Alex Jones, a lot of his show was just reading off AP and Reuters articles. It was just that he would put a lot more theatrics into it, but he would also read off the ones that the bigger organizations maybe wouldn't pick up on. The weirder sounding ones that were a little bit more fringe, they were still coming from AP because that was how he himself established his own credibility. Ironically, in order for him to show credibility, it was like, look, I'm paying attention to the exact same news sources that all the mainstream media is paying attention to. I'm just pointing out these weird articles that are slipping through the cracks. So even what you might consider counterculture and fringe in the early 2000s, 2010s was still coming from the exact same faucet. And I mean, you can make an argument that it's still coming from those same faucets. It just is so much more obscured. It's almost like a corporate shell game where you create a company and that company creates a company and that company creates a company. And by the time you're eight companies deep, it's impossible to find out what the source company really was that founded all this. That's sort of how the AP and Reuters works. It's sort of how the media works. And ironically, it's also how the CIA front organizations would work. This is how the CIA was able to, say, establish a magazine in a remote country and establish credibility with it, is because they would create a corporation. That corporation would create a student advocacy group. That student advocacy group would naturally bubble up some leaders, you know, just over organically. And then those leaders would be co-opted and they would go and found these magazines and these news stations. So the news station, the magazine, had the credibility of the people that came up organically, even though the seed was originally planted and 100% funded by the CIA.
Yeah, that's definitely really interesting. And I do think that definitely now, and I like what you said about Alex Jones. I think you need to bring that up because that's important to say that, hey, he was still pulling his stuff from the same faucet. And I do think, though, where the optimism comes in for me, and I know that you're probably more of a pessimist than I am.
Absolutely.
About where things are going. No, it's fine. And I'm definitely way more on the optimistic scale than most people, even though I see all the negativity that's going on. I just typically think that people at the core are, at least want to be good. I do think that there are things that happen in people's lives that drive them to do things that they probably wouldn't normally do. Again, that's up for debate too, because there's a lot of different variables with that, what I just said too, but that's also the optimist in me as well. But what you said about Alex Jones is true, that he was using the same faucet. But I will say, as we've gotten into the 2016 on to 2020, especially after 2020, I think a lot of people were very disenfranchised with what the media was perpetrating. And I think that because of that there were all of these different podcasts and different alternative media outlets that popped up. And I don't think they're all controlled. I'm going to put it that way. So I think that we are able to get a hold of information a lot better than we were before. However, because we're getting so much of it now, it's hard to decipher what's true, what's not true. And then you do have all of these operations that have infiltrated it as well. So it just makes it like a hodgepodge of just overload of information, and you don't really know what you're looking at or not looking at. And then it's tough to decipher, you know, what's the truth.
I think a good litmus test for this is, and I can't remember where this quote came from, but sometimes the news is what it isn't. Meaning, like, all of the stories, you open up a newspaper, you turn on the TV, you open up a magazine, if they're all talking about the exact same 10 headlines that week, regardless of the medium or the source, if you're listening to your fringe podcast, you turn on Fox News or whatever, if they're all talking about the same things, there's evidence that that's part of like an Operation Mockingbird. Not that everyone's collecting checks from the CIA, but they're being influenced to cover that particular story as opposed to the other infinite number of stories that are probably worthy of being reported on. And that's part of that Wurlitzer analogy, is that Frank Wisner, he presses a key on the keyboard. He's not the one going over and like actually emitting the sound from the speaker and doing all the work. He just has to press the key. That's kind of the same premise. If you can just feed the story into that main line of wherever it comes out on AP or Reuters or whatever the outlet is, if you're the one that gets to feed it into that stream, then it goes downstream and then it can spread out and take on all these different fringe outlets and different perspectives. And in reality, you're the one that's just kind of like perpetuating one of these same 10 stories. And this is kind of dovetail into the one other obscure name that I just want to get into. You won't find this guy's name come up directly in Operation Mockingbird, but if you were to plot this guy's life and the lifespan of Operation Mockingbird and what the Operation Mockingbird was doing and what parts of the country, this guy lines up perfectly. It's a guy named Edward Lansdale, and kind of like Bernays, man, Edward Lansdale, his background was in psychology and advertising. If you've ever seen Mad Men, this guy was like Don Draper of the CIA. No lie. He was a Madison Avenue advertising executive, and then he basically gets into intelligence. So 1947 is officially when the CIA is founded. It's also right when Operation Mockingbird begins. Some place it before, some place it after, but it's right in the middle of when this operation actually starts to get a name. 1948 is when the OPC is formed, which is where Frank Wisner, basically, he's the one that headed all of that. In 1950, 2 years later, Edward Lansdale, he begins doing these psyops in the Philippines. And it's its own wormhole, or its own like can of worms, and I'm not going to drive us. I guess this is, you know, down the rabbit hole. So like, but
go ahead.
So Edward Lansdale, some of the craziest stuff that he did in the Philippines, he would research local folklore. And they had this version of vampires that I believe are called the Aswang or Aswang, A-S-W-A-N-G. And what he did is he actually killed a villager or found a villager that was already, who knows, but came across a dead villager, hung him upside down and put little vampire marks in his neck and drained him of all of his blood. So that then when wild. The other villagers came and found this guy, they're convinced that these vampires are now inside this group. And essentially it was, what will they believe? Can I do this? Will they believe it? And if they do believe it, how can I manipulate that chaos? Will that make them more manageable, less manageable? It was all just psychological warfare stuff. So he's doing these kind of operations, like pretty out there stuff, right? Like staging a vampire murder. He's actually doing this. And as this is happening, you would imagine that news would get spread, at least among that village, and maybe it goes outwards into the rest of the Philippines. Now there's news articles. Edward Lansdale also happens to be a CIA/military advisor. Just think about the feedback loop here, because it gets complicated, and this is where I was getting into this force multiplier stuff. Edward Lansdale, Madison Avenue ad executive, right? He understands psychology. He understands how to affect people's thinking and emotions. He's doing these crazy feats that are getting picked up by news, and he would be able to go back to the CIA and be like, all right, guys, be on the lookout. You're going to hear some crazy stuff coming out of the Philippines. It's your boy. You know, I'm the one that did it. So don't send troops and you don't have to like spend resources, because I'm the one that did all this. So there's clearly some sort of coordination where I did something crazy. You're going to hear about it. Let me tell you about it so you don't freak out from the feedback loop that happens. Even though he's not necessarily part of Operation Mockingbird, the fact that he can manipulate news and then go back to the head office and say, I manipulate the news, here's what to look out for, keep it out of your noise filtering system, means that holistically, he is part of Mockingbird. And that's how all of the agents are, outside of the ones that were exposed directly by Ramparts or directly by the Church Committee. Everyone was sort of just this tangential. They're not in it. They're not out of it, but they're calling a certain person at the right time and even saying, publish this story, add this detail, or, oh, by the way, this thing got out. And as long as you're maintaining any sort of communication with the CIA, you are in Operation Mockingbird, whether or not you're getting paid for it. And Edward Lansdale is one of the best examples of this. It's a wild story to look into this guy.
Yeah, man, that's wild. I've never heard of him until today. So that is unreal that he was taking a dead body and hanging upside down and put bite marks in the neck to make the villagers that think.
He would also paint evil eyes on the sides of buildings and stuff. And then make it seem like it was a supernatural force that was coming through these villages just to see what happens, right?
Well, and think about this though, Thomas. But now you got my mind really working and thinking about it in the aspect of how many of these types of operations have happened around the world where it wasn't anything supernatural at all. And it was something completely manufactured. And that's something I've really been on board with really since the beginning, but mainly the past year, where I look at different layers of stuff because, you know, I go out and look for these things. And that's part of what we do. We go out and shoot films. And I've seen some weird stuff. So in my opinion, I do think there's some weird things. Then we could argue that it's, you know, Jungian, it's all in my head. But at the end of the day, I think there is a supernatural world. Well, how much of it, though, is manufactured by external sources? And I think about that a lot when I'm out there. And I won't give anything away, but we got a new film coming out in a couple months. And I had a very profound thing happen to me on this trip. And it ended up not being what I originally thought. And that's all I'm going to say. But that was like a huge kind of mind-breaking moment for me where I realized how easy it is, even for me who grew up in the woods my whole life. And I'm pretty good at being able to decipher between something that's real or something that's not, or if something's pareidolia, you know what I mean? And for something to happen in this film to me, and then it completely get flipped on its head, let me know that even as adept as I am in the woods, how easy it is for anyone to not see exactly what they think they saw. And I think that was something huge for me. And it's really got my mind thinking about how much is manipulated, how much is being lied to, how much is somebody heard a story and then they just piggyback on that story, or they see something because they heard somebody tell them a story. So now they're seeing something that's not really there. And then it becomes like a whole train of, oh, you got this whole village seeing stuff now, and maybe they're not seeing it at all. Maybe it's just this Operation Mockingbird in the woods or in a village. And maybe it's not even the government doing it, in which I do think that the government can do it, clearly by what you've just told me, that they've been doing it for a while. But it could be that someone thinks they saw something or something happened, and all of a sudden it spawns out this entire village of stories, and none of it's based on any fact or truth at all.
Right. Well, another thing that he did was he would just play ghost sounds out in the jungle. So people, like the villagers, they would just hear ghost sounds, not even have to see anything. And I wonder how many people to this day are hearing a story from their grandma or their grandpa about this time they saw a vampire victim or they heard ghost sounds out in the jungle. And it was literally just some CIA guy messing with them. And it's going to get passed down for generations, and it's going to turn into its own little folklore, all because of Edward Lansdale.
Man, this is... it's definitely adding to kind of the road that I've already been going down with a lot of this paranormal stuff. And, you know, fortunately for me, I've got a great group of guys around me, and they think a lot like me when it comes to this stuff. And we do a lot of checks and balances when we're out there. When someone says they see something or whatever, we're going to go to the full extent to prove if it's provable. So basically, if we do all of these different things and we still can't figure it out, then it's left in this area of, I don't know, right? Maybe you did see something. Maybe it is something. But to do the checks and balances thoroughly and then say, actually, it's not this, it's this, or whatever, is important to do. And, you know, that's something that I try to do as much as possible, is be ethical with this stuff, because I know that in this field of the paranormal and hunting Bigfoot and all of these things, it's very easy to dip into the, I hate using this word, but I mean it in the real sense, grifting sense of, I'm going to try to manufacture something. Or if I think I see something, I'm not going to do the checks and balances. We're just going to go with,
You're going to lean into it a little bit, because that's what you're there for. Yeah.
Right. And I definitely don't want to do that. And the more that I research about how the mind works. And what you just said now also lends into this idea of there has to be a balance between knowing that, man, everything isn't weird. Everything's not paranormal. Just like I say to people all the time about the government, well, everything's not fake. Everything's not manufactured. There's a lot that is, and that's the tough part, is deciphering what is and what isn't. But once we get in this mentality of everything's fake, well, I think we lose at that point, because then we're not understanding that the best lies are wrapped in a lot of truth.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a slippery slope. And I know that's another fallacy, but it really is a slippery slope, because then it turns into, well, what book or person from history do you trust? And at what point do you have to personally go and vet that they existed and the things they said actually happened? And at some point, every one of us has to stand on the shoulders of, you know, previous researchers and just take what they said kind of as gospel. Otherwise, you're going to go back and make your own flint and start your own fire and build your own, like, you know what I mean? Like, how far back do you bring it? Make your own computer out of base, you know, minerals and stuff. So that, I think that's a large part of it. And I also wanted to just note that the Operation Mockingbird, even though it's apparently ends after this church committee, like you were mentioning, we can still see the exact same patterns happening today in the same way that it's really easy to get swept up and stuff. A random MK Ultra tangent, something that kind of keeps me up at night sometimes, is this guy, Dr. Jollyton West. A lot of them call him Jolly West. He came up in the JFK assassination, because I think he was the one that interviewed Jack Ruby. There was rumors that he had interviewed Timothy McVeigh. He just had, whenever there was some sort of a trauma-based, any sort of situation in the military, he would usually be right there on the scene. And he had this report, and he basically mentioned that all the exotic drugs and torture methods and weird, you know, electrode strapping stuff that the CIA was into, if you just gave someone a good old-fashioned sleep deprivation after about 72 hours, the human mind just breaks down. You don't need sonium pentothal. You don't need a Clockwork Orange chair. You don't need any of that. Just make it so you can't get a good night's sleep for about 3 days in a row, and you are like Edward Bernays's, you know, perfect sort of like Barbie doll. You can just pose you and make you do anything that he wants to. And I think that you can extrapolate that to everything, right? Like, it's, you're out in the woods and you feel so civilized, man. 3 days out in the woods with no food and no sleep, you're going to be back to caveman, right? You're no longer going to have the same type of critical thinking facilities where you're going to be like, hey, let's double check this. And now all of a sudden, a completely different version of you takes over. And it's not like we've got control over that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I can tell you, from being out in the woods for lengthy periods of time and, you know, still having food and all that, I mean, when you're away from civilization, when you're on your own, you got to be very cognizant of what's going on around you, because your mind can trick you into hearing things, seeing things, all of these different things come along with it. And I think that for me, it's, I've been out there long enough to understand that part of it and then be able to take on board that, you know what, that wasn't anything at all.
It's a delicate balance, right? Because you can't say, oh, that was nothing to every twig snap, because every once in a while that might have been a bear, right? Like, you right. do have to be alert. So there's a reason why these TV shows like Alone, where someone goes and stays in, you know, the Alaskan tundra by themselves for 30 days and they start going crazy. And it's wild, because that was sort of the default state for so long of our history. But really, we are so adopted into societies and getting information and having these like powwows sort of dynamics, that once you remove that, we revert back so easily. So anyways, I had another list here too, because I know you wanted to get into this. So here's the perfect segue for it, is that all of these smaller operations, these student groups, these radio broadcast stations, I've got sort of a punch list of the main ones. So the main ones were in 1950, Radio Free Europe. This is the CIA setting up an organization in Eastern Europe. They fund it and they front it. Then you've got Radio Liberty, which is in West Germany, which the CIA funds and manages. There's one called Radio Swan. This is one of the most obvious ones. You can just Google Radio Swan. You'll actually find the CIA ties to this one. This one was in Honduras, and it was to plant anti-Castro news into Cuba. There was Radio Free Asia, which was in the Philippines. There's probably some Edward Lansdale connections in there, but we'll leave him for another day. There was another one called Voice of Liberation. These were just all of the different stations, right? And then the actual front groups, which is where I think that you've got some input on some of these. There was the National Committee for a Free Europe, NCFE. They're the ones that created Radio Free Europe. Again, this is like these corporate shell games where one group creates another one. There was the American Committee for the Liberation of the Peoples of Russia, which probably is obvious what that was about. There was this one called the CCF, and this is one of the biggest ones, the Congress for Cultural Freedom. They're the ones that bred intellectuals and artists and magazines. This was them controlling counterculture, but the counterculture was designed by the CIA, which you could probably apply to like the 60s in the US too. But most people are like, no, there's no way they could have infiltrated our culture. They only did that overseas and to other places. There was the Asia Foundation. There was the Institute of International Labor and Research. There was the Independent Service for Information, the ISI. There was the International Organization Division. That was the IOD that ran all of these military operations. And then the National Student Association. And the National Student Association is one of the things that Ramparts exposes in 1967. So Ramparts talks about this NSA, funny acronym, National Student Association, and they start peeling apart all the layers of that onion. And that's when they kind of find out like, oh, this isn't just this one group that the CIA put out. This is just like one of the many heads of this Hydra. And there's a lot of these different Hydras all over the world. So that's kind of the whole evolution of that. And then you were mentioning one in particular that even carries into modern day.
Yeah. And you were talking about these different groups. One of the other ones too would be the Crusade for Freedom. And their public goal was to raise funds for Radio Free Europe. And this was backed by Dwight D. Eisenhower. And it was actually conceived in 1948 by Frank Wisner and the OPC, and they made this freedom bell that they used to send around the United States with them to try to get money, and it looked like the Liberty Bell, and it's super crazy, and people would sign it, and they actually brought it to West Berlin. They took it out of the United States too, and it was kind of this whole front to, you know, go against communism. And that was the point. And it leads right into this Radio Free Europe. And it leads into this new version of Radio Free Europe that I happened to run across in some research I was doing about the CIA's involvement in hip hop. And I ran down this whole rabbit hole, and I just basically docked the information to the side because I said, it's not really going to be real pertinent for the episode I'm putting out. And it actually starts with Chuck D. And this is August of last year. And this was actually at the White House. And Chuck D was at the White House with Antony Blinken. And Blinken is an American lawyer and diplomat. And he's actually served as the 71st United States Secretary of State from 2021 to 2025. And he is standing next to Chuck D. And if people don't understand who Chuck D is, he was with a rap group, one of the early.
He was Flavor Flav's hype man, right?
No, Flavor Flav was his hype man. Yeah. Yeah. So he was part of a group called Public Enemy, and they were against the system. They were against the government. So it's kind of a big deal that Chuck D is standing in front of the White House, and he is joining forces with YouTube to become one of Washington's global music ambassadors. And this was a role directly modeled on Washington's Cold War era efforts to use the arts to inspire US-backed regime change in Eastern Europe. And this is what we were just talking about with this whole fake Liberty Bell and Crusade for Freedom and Radio Free Europe, this is kind of the new version of that. So people had, you know, questioned, you know, why is Chuck D there? There were a ton of other artists there too. You had like Herbie Hancock, you had Jelly Roll there, Kane Brown, Teddy Swims, all of these big artists are a part of it. And they are connecting with YouTube to go around the world and perform, but under the direction of the US government. So that was a crazy part, because you've got a guy who is, his beginning started with Fight the Power and Rebel Without a Cause. So he's also a big proponent of Black Panthers, Malcolm X. So the complete opposite of what he's doing now. And this is this new Cold War that's happening right now with China, Russia, and they are sending these artists out under the direction of Lior Cohen. Now, if you know who Lior Cohen is, he's been in the hip hop industry for over 30 years. He led Def Jam from 1988 to 2003. He's basically either personally managed or oversaw artists from Run DMC, LL Cool J, Beastie Boys, Slick Rick, De La Soul, Rakim. We even move up to the more modern era stuff, Redman, Method Man, Jay-Z, DMX, Ludacris. We get even more modern, Wiz Khalifa, Black Eyed Peas, Bruno Mars. He's dealt with all of them, especially hip hop. So for me, I wasn't so shocked that Chuck D was making this statement working with the government. He kind of always has been. He's been one of Lior Cohen's boys from the beginning, and Lior Cohen is interwoven within the hip hop industry and just music industry in general. And he's kind of like the manipulator of getting artists to do and say what he would like them to do, or at least whoever's telling him to tell them what to do. So I didn't think that was that big of a deal whenever I heard that he was there. But Cohen came out and said that YouTube is teaming up with the U.S. State Department to help them leverage global events. We will utilize major international gatherings to inspire action. What kind of actions? We don't know what actions they're talking about. That's the best
part. Depends who's cutting the checks.
Exactly. So if you think about it, during the Cold War, during this period of time, when we're talking about Radio Free Europe, what they did was they sent these famous artists over there, Nina Simone, Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, Ella Fitzgerald, all overseas. They were massively famous, but there was a big part of it. They were also Black artists. That was a point, because they were trying to combat communism by putting Black artists overseas. And then, this is the best part, they were trying to spin it like America is, oh, we got no racism, man. We're good. Like, you guys
got
to understand.
Look at this music we got.
Look at all this music we got. I mean, essentially, they just had them dancing out there for them is what they were doing. But what they were using these artists to perform overseas, and they were playing them on Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, and they were bombarding these people with this music, because they were conditioning the people overseas to understand that this music is the sound of freedom, specifically jazz radio. And they had what they called the Hour of Freedom that they would play over Radio Free Europe, and it would be this jazz music. And the CIA deliberately chose Black artists to help soften America's image and promote this supposed racial harmony that they had, because at the time, there were people over in different countries that were gravitating to communism, because communism had this front of, oh, look at all these artists that we have. Look at all this, you know, all these different arts that we're putting out, music, paintings, all these different things. They were compiling that in with communism. So now you've got this CIA movement to combat it by putting these black artists over there, promoting jazz music as freedom. And then for people overseas that don't really know what's going on here in the States, because you don't have the internet, so you don't know what's going on. You're only going by what you're either seeing in front of you or hearing over the radio. They're, oh man, black people, white people, Asians, everybody gets along over there. So now they're pushing this ideology, and this was all CIA. This was all part of Operation Mockingbird. And what they didn't understand was this wasn't organic. This wasn't a grassroots movement, and they felt like it was. And that was the CIA helping create this atmosphere of this is what you want to be a part of, so they could stop communism before it could catch roots in some of the countries that were considering it at the time.
So it's not all bad, right? The CIA supports the arts and they support artists and music, right? Isn't that what we're getting from it? They might have supported artists more than someone that says they support artists, right? They're actually putting their... And another interesting part of the Radio Free Europe, it still exists today. A lot of these outfits that the CIA created and funded and managed, once the church committee exposed all of this and once it became public knowledge, a lot of them splintered off and just became these publicly accountable organizations and didn't even change their name. A lot of them did change their name, but Radio Free Europe is one of those that didn't. And I believe that there's still like a modern iteration of that that traces back its lineage despite being connected to the CIA. You could probably make arguments that they're still in it. But I think another interesting part of this is that we're talking about this almost as if it were controversial that these artists or these musicians were being backed by the CIA, because in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, even 70s, it was controversial. But now compare that to today, when there's a new Top Gun movie or a Mission Impossible movie or pretty much any Tom Cruise movie, coincidentally, it's almost a selling point that, oh, we've got CIA on the staff. We had CIA look at this script. There was one with Ben Affleck. The name of it is escaping me. It started with an A. But this was almost marketed. I think American Sniper is another one of these versions where movies will now come out of Hollywood and they'll say right on the marketing scheme, like, the CIA told us what to put in this movie, so you know it's legit, which is a complete inversion of what it was maybe 3 or 4 decades ago, when this would have been so controversial that it would have been top secret. Now they advertise it as if it's a selling point, and maybe what we're seeing is just another inch towards that. Now Chuck D doesn't need to hide the fact. It's actually giving him credibility, and in exchange he's giving the State Department credibility. He's like, look, it's the fight the power guy. He's on our side now. So clearly the power is gone. The man has been beaten. And, you know, you can trust anything that we say. I feel that there's another great talk on the other end of this spectrum by a guy named Wise Intelligent from the Poor Righteous Teachers. And I don't think it went viral, but he had this clip where he was talking about how intelligence and state agencies infiltrated hip hop and deliberately went from all of this self-empowerment and, you know, stop drinking and smoking and let's be healthy and let's, like, you know, do community organization. He almost describes how this external group comes in and says, we're going to need more Alizé, we're going to need more Newports and gang violence and all this. And that there was a transition from this conscious wave of hip hop into just being gangster rap, and gangster rap becomes the most marketable thing that they can put on anything, movies, TV, music, the music videos. And Wise Intelligence describes this in a way that it was so intentional, that it wasn't an organic movement that just happened. I guess anyone that's seen Boondocks and when they show like the BET executive board and they're like, we need more sex and drugs and people doing bad things. He kind of describes that, but in a very real sense in the music industry. They got all the heads of all the different labels and said, this is the new initiative. If you want to play ball, if you want to make money, this is what the market's ready for. And that's kind of how it worked.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anybody is just joining the show for the first time, I did an entire episode on that called CIA and Hip Hop. And I talk about how that they were infiltrated on that end of the 1980s into the early 1990s. And it was a very conscious rap era, but there were some outliers that would be considered by today's standards gangster rappers or explicit rappers, even in the late 1970s and early 1980s, but they were such outliers. And I think that the CIA watched how some of those guys were operating and they said, we can use that. And if we start pushing this more to the forefront, and they put the squeeze on the label execs too and said, this is what we're going to do. And we can move into why they wanted to do that. They wanted to fill the privatized prisons, all these different reasons to make gangster rap what people think about when they think about hip hop. You know, what's funny. I bring up the hip hop to people, especially people that don't listen to it. And that's what they think of hip hop. They think of gangster rap. And it really did. It took over to the point that now when you listen to hip hop, that's generally what you're going to hear. Now, are there a ton of other artists out there right now, especially where the independent scene is now? There are a ton of hip hop artists out there that are not gangster rappers, but you don't know about them because of how the industry pushes this agenda, I guess is the best way to say it, when it comes to, hey, this is what we're going to market. And kind of slide back into the Chuck D stuff and even all of these tours that the CIA was sending these artists out on. Probably one of the craziest ones was Louis Armstrong's 1960 tour of the Congo. And so it was a newly independent country. They had just elected a new president, Patrice Lumumba, and the CIA did not like this guy. They called him the African Castro, and they wanted him out because he was about democracy. He was about running the country his way. And the CIA actually attached itself to Louis Armstrong's tour. And they accompanied him around the country. And while they were doing that, they were gaining information on Lumumba's whereabouts and his security so they could carry out this assassination. And a few months later, Lumumba was killed. They don't know who the killer is to this day. And ever since, the Congo went into a 60-year tailspin of dictatorship, civil war, and it still hasn't recovered because of it. So the CIA has been using music for a long time to manipulate even global events outside of the United States, which is really wild, but it all boils down to this Radio Free Europe and this propaganda that they were pushing for Operation Mockingbird. This is just the music format of Operation Mockingbird, and they are sliding back into what it seems like a version of that with Chuck D at the forefront, kind of the old head. And he did come out. They started asking him about what he thought about working next to the CIA. He got really mad and he said that the government's different now. I'm just paraphrasing is what he said. He said the government's different now and he's still not about what the government's about, but he knows that the guys he's working with are the good guys.
Big but. And there's so many more examples on this. We could do an entire episode, but even on the visual arts, the CIA was a large part of the wave of brutalism architecture. They were behind the huge wave of abstract art coming through. Even if you look at Shepard Fairey, for example, this is a counterculture artwork style. Obey kind of came from They Live, which is sort of like this, you know, conspiracy classic. And then that turns into a presidential campaign. And now Shepard Fairey's style artwork is kind of seen as like a democratic promotional tool, which is so weird that that came from They Live. Literally, it went from the They Live movie looking at aliens out in the middle of the world. Now it's being used to promote, you know, Obama and Biden and the rest of sort of the clique. And that just kind of shows you how the state and the CIA and anyone else can take your favorite musician, your favorite artist, your favorite anything, and just flip them upside down and all around.
Absolutely. And I want to say this too, when it comes to musicians and any kind of celebrity, right, in whatever field, I am of the idea that they're not all bought and paid for, at least not knowingly. I think that a lot of times it's useful idiots that they use too, that are in a position to be able to be manipulated. Now, don't get me wrong. I think there are some that are completely bought in and they know exactly what they're doing and they are completely pushing whatever they're told to push. But I do think there's a large group of them that are just, man, I'm just showing up to a set and I'm shooting this music video. Oh, you want me to put this on? Oh, these devil horns, cool, I'll do this. And we'll throw up these sigils in the back. I don't think that most of them really care. They're getting a check. They're going home.
They're just doing what they were already going to do. Now they just have extra money coming in and a little bit of creative feedback. This is the exact same dynamic with MK Ultra and all these scientists. There's almost like a romantic conspiracy theorist version where the CIA is like, all right, we're going to start this thing called MK Ultra. Let's get all the nerds in one room and let's just brainstorm crazy stuff to do. It's not how it happened. It happened the other way. It was almost the way that a baseball team will send a scout to a bunch of different countries and all over the United States and just look for people that have kind of hidden talents and recruit them to go and play for the majors. The CIA would go to hospitals, to universities, and they would be like, what's that guy doing? He's playing audio loops in someone's head and dosing them with LSD and giving them these weird commands, and they're like getting spaced out. I like the cut of your jib guy. Here's an extra 30 grand. Keep doing what you've been doing. Here's a little extra money to do it with. The only difference is now we want you to send your reports directly to us first, and then we'll tell you what we want you to report on publicly after that, in case there's like some cool intellectual property or some things that we want to keep for ourselves for state secret reasons or whatever. Are you okay with that? And the scientist or the doctor, whoever they're talking to, is like, you want to give me money to do more of what I'm already doing, and I just got to send my report to you first and everything else is the same. And there was probably an unspoken thing like, plus you get a get out of jail free card. Plus we'll fund you and we'll like fly you some subjects that you can just do whatever you want with without any legal scrutiny. You can get away with anything. So that's probably very enticing. If you gave that same plan to an actor, a musician, you're like, hey, keep doing what you're doing. Here's an extra $1 million. Plus here's a get out of jail free card. If you get real crazy, you know, on our dime, we'll take care of it for you. A lot of artists would be like, oh, that's the ultimate creative freedom. Yes, please. And you don't ever have to say, by the way, I'm from the CIA. In fact, they would want the exact opposite. They just want you collecting the check and not asking questions.
Yeah, man. I'm with you 100% there too. I think there's so many different levels to it. And I do agree with, if I'm already doing it, and you're going to pay me more to do
you're already on a team and someone wants to scout you and they're like, hey, you want to join the majors? Here's a check to keep doing it at a higher level. Yeah, man. And I would almost guarantee that once that person from the farm team flies and they put on the actual jersey, like they're in it. If they got all these coaches telling them to do like, oh, run over there and go do this and do this stretch, they're not stopping to think. Why? Because they're at a whole nother level. They're at the level you've been trying to be at. So why wouldn't you take all of their advice and everything they're giving you? It not only would it be biting the hand that's feeding you, but it would also be, well, I don't know better than them. They're clearly at this higher, in this hierarchy, they're above me because they know something I don't. So let me just follow their lead. And man, you can get away with a lot of that. That's essentially how con men operate. But if you're a con man with the backing of the US State Department, it's a whole extra level of con, right? You can make lies come true.
Absolutely, man. And I think that's a good way to end the episode. You can tell lies to make it true. And I think that's exactly what this entire Operation Mockingbird was, and I think still is, Thomas. I think there's at least a version of it. I don't know if they even call it that anymore.
I would argue, man, that it floated out of the hands of the State Department, and now it's with all these media conglomerates. It's with Meta and X and, you know, all of the different groups, just the same way that Coca-Cola is not an American company. This is like a global conglomerate. Disney, right? The Walt right. Disney Company is not an American company. It is a global, almost an intergalactic company. This all they got to do is play one movie on the moon, and now they're intergalactic. And that supersedes any CIA, FBI, any of that. They're bigger than that. And I feel that the state and the CIA probably realizes that. If anything, the CIA is now an instrument of corporations as opposed to the other way around, which maybe it was in the 40s or 50s.
Absolutely, man. And I think that it's definitely expanded into a different sphere that we can't quantify, like you said, back in the 40s and 50s. It's just completely different. And I think that we have to look at it that way, especially when we're talking about social media conglomerates who are running people's brains, essentially. That's what they're doing. They're telling us how to think, how to feel. And that's the conspiracy theorist community as well. They're shifting us around all over the place.
I think in the future, some people will look back fondly with rose-tinted glasses and it'll be like, man, you remember when it was humans running psyops on us? Remember when it was good old human beings in the CIA that were running everything? Because it's going to be algorithms at a certain point, if it's not already. And I would rather be organically mind controlled. You know, I don't want this new like meta mind control. I'd rather it be some guy chain smoking in a dark office in Washington somewhere. If you had to pick, right? At least there might be a soul deep down encrusted somewhere in there. You're not getting that from the Terminator.
No, man, you're not. That's just cold steel and they don't care. That's at the end of the day with that. But man, this was a great episode. I really appreciate you coming on here. I know you've done a lot of research on it and I figured it would be a fun time. And I've been wanting to talk about it and I thought you'd be great for this and you did. You killed it, knocked it out of the park. Really appreciate it, Thomas. If you could tell everybody where to find your stuff. If everybody wants to know too, the little toys I have behind me that you see every week, Thomas also created those, all the artwork for them. Nephilim Portal Babies, I got the
I think you got one of the first Nephilim Portal Babies ever, man.
I do. So it's awesome. I know Tony's got one in his studio as well. And you do great work, man, on so many different fronts. You're a talented guy. You're not just a great researcher, but a talented guy. And I enjoy working with people who are just multifaceted. And, you know, I really appreciate you coming to the show. If you can, just let everybody know where to find you.
Yeah, the best place is just go to ParanoidAmerican.com. You'll find everything I got going on there. I try to do a bunch of different podcasts and other projects here and there. You can look at Occult Book Club that I do with Juan Ayala. I do a live show called Sink Tank on Tuesdays with Andre Zurtis and my friend David Charles Plate and a few others. I do a live stream on Fridays at midnight called The Secret Society of Good Guys with Chaney Layla and Abby, which is a crazy time. Another show called Under the Docks with Sean Chris from Kill the Mockingbirds, where we review old conspiracy documentaries. There's more and more I can keep going, but just go find all of it at ParanoidAmerican.com. And I'm doing my absolute best to take this kind of information and present it in new mediums, putting it in music videos and comic books and toys and action figures and stickers and stuff. Because that was the gap that I saw. There's so much doom and gloom version of this, and there's so much of the news pundit take on it. But where's the Project Mockingbird action figure, right? Like that's kind of the hole that I'm trying to fill constantly. There were no Nephilim action figures. There were no homunculus growing kits. So I'm doing my best to make people interested in these topics in like strange new ways. So yeah, you can help me make that happen at ParanoidAmerican.com.
Yeah, it's great stuff, guys. He does great work. And definitely go check him out. Check out all of his projects that he just said. I know you're a working man. And I enjoy that, man, because I'm the same way. I got my hands in a bunch of stuff. And I'm with you on trying to find creative avenues for people to connect to conspiracies or just weird things. And I've got a lot of things I'm working on that will come to fruition at some point this year, but definitely been working real hard and I'm glad to see other people doing the same thing and glad to see that you're definitely getting more and more shine. Because it's funny, a lot of the guys I work with for the past 4 or 5 years or whatever that I've seen have stuck with it. And you're one of them that's just been plugging away, you know, just
I can't burning not, midnight man. Oil. I can't not do this. You know what I mean?
I know, man. For sure, man. Well, guys, I really appreciate you. Gonna play my single Plato's Cave on the way out. You know what it is, guys. Go outside, touch grass, and get your tail out the hole.
I'm feeling what shocks us, does us in. We just love what's toxic and we binge. Think we're free when we're on the fringe. But we're lost, yeah, we're lost, yeah, we're lost. In the garden while his friends slept. Aye. We're just broken pieces to the gold and no missteps. Aye. I'm here to break down all your idols ritualistic. Yeah. If you don't like it, I don't speak in euphemistic terms. Whoa. The world is run by Charles Montgomery Burns. They keeping it hooded like CERN. They've done it in thirds before the earth was occurred. And all the friction I'm getting is warranted when your chambers don't echo. The insurance needed for what I be saying don't come from progressive or gecko. And why are you popping Prosecco if you ain't putting in labor? I'm taking shots of espresso. Yeah. Every second I favor more than the last. We never get a return on time lost with the divine laws, but people looking to wrap it like tacos with lime sauce. Hey, I never cared too much what they saying. Matter of fact, what I'm saying, I ain't here to explain it. On the levels all they see, but they don't see my creator. Campaign of politicians for your souls, no debate. But top of the next, I'm calling on Benedict Arnold. I got me a chopper. Most of our collars are blue, most of us can't even afford one. Lining up for new iPhones and Jordans. It ain't our blessings that we praying for misfortunes. On others, on our socials, feeling so important. I'm breaking you down, ain't here to make you feel comfortable. Just avowing the opposite sex while creating the monster's hotness. These hills we create for ourselves. Timelines are nothing but cells. Shadows dance and they came from our mind.